Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest tonight grew up in Northwest Detroit and had a fairy tale life with her husband Jamal and their three young children. On November 4th, 2006, while massaging her shoulders, her husband slit her throat, shot her in the head and her arms, and then killed himself. She has no hatred, resentment, or animosity toward him, and she still loves him. And today is the volunteer director for Alternatives for Girls. Her name? Kim Newberry. An inspiration. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
Now back to Anything Is Possible with Jack Krasula on News Talk 760 WJR.
We're with the volunteer director for Alternatives for Girls, a phenomenal lady, Kim Newberry. Kim, welcome, an honor to have you.
Thank you for being here.
Can we start by talking about your childhood and your parents?
Yes. Well, I am one of seven children. I was actually raised with my four brothers. My younger two siblings came later on in my life, almost at my adulthood. But I was raised with two parents, my mother and my father. They are both, I guess, in the baby boomer years. And we had we were called the Waltons. So the typical household, 6 o'clock. Every day, my mother called us from down the street playing, and we all ate together at the dinner table.
Were you the princess of the family, being the only girl with all these boys?
I have always said, and everyone always still says, that I am very spoiled. Not so much materialistically, but with love and attention. Because my brothers pretty much, I also act as a second mother, because when I tell them what to do, they do it. But they also spoil me, because whatever it is that I need, they generally see to it that I get assistance with it.
They see the wisdom. What's the biggest thing you learned from your mom, and what's the biggest thing you learned from your dad?
My mother has taught me so many things that as a child I did not understand, but now I practice with my own children. And she always told me, Kimberly, if you ever need something or want to ask someone a question, go ahead and do so. The worst that they can say is no. So I've always lived by that. My father taught me, I remember there was a time when everyone was wearing these little paper-thin leather jackets. They were very expensive, and I wanted one so bad. It was about $99. And I said, Daddy, please buy it for me. Please buy me the jacket. And he said, no, I will not buy you that jacket to walk to school with, and someone may try to rob you or shoot you and take it from you. But he went and bought me this big puffy coat that was almost twice the price. And I was so upset. And he said, Kimberly, be unique. Don't be a follower. Be a leader. And create your own style.
Eagles don't flock.
That's
Eagles
right.
Don't flock. Let's talk about your days at Central State University. Your major was English pre-law. What does English pre-law mean?
English pre-law is a major that focuses on grammar as well as oral speaking, and it prepares you to do well in law school, which was my ultimate career goal. I wanted to go through college, start law school, and become a criminal attorney.
While there, well, let's go. Your dad, when he turns 40, turns to a life of drugs. Share us, will you please?
When I was in the eighth grade, I lost my father and my paternal grandfather within 6 months of each other, and my father took it really badly. He was the one in the family that everyone looked to for assistance, that everyone depended on. He was a strong male figure in our family on my father's side as well as my mother's side. But all of a sudden, I started noticing changes in him, that he was gone for a whole day. He wouldn't come home at night. However, when he did come home, it was still, come here, baby girl, come and help me with this. And I would always run. I was daddy's girl. And then I started noticing my mother just having this stressed out look on her face. But as a child, I just kept playing along. And in the ninth grade, the last day of school, we came home, and I noticed that One of my uncles was there, along with the police, and my mother sat us down and said, "I need to talk to you all. Your father is on drugs, and we need to move out of here." At that point, my mother was going through a lot with my father. She had been working with my uncles to go get him out of drug houses, to pull him out of motels that he was staying in with other drug addicts, and trying to help him, and he just wouldn't accept her help. So she said, for the sake of us, she had to move. And at that moment, she told us the police were there to help us so that if my father came and tried to fight her or anything, the police would protect us. So we basically, within an hour's time, had to start throwing our belongings in garbage bags, taking whatever we could, and hurry up and leave the home to go live with my grandmother. At that time, my father did come back, and that was my first time really seeing someone on drugs and noticing what it looks like, and it was very painful for me. So for about a year, we went to live with my grandmother. We were in our basement or our attic, and we stayed there, and my mother, through all of that, she still kept us together. We went back and forth to our house quite a few times because we needed clothing. We needed to feed our dog that we left there. So we had to walk through our home with drug addicts, wearing our clothes, cooking on our stove, lounging around our house. And she said, "If anyone touches you, scream, and I will come to you, but get whatever you can very quickly and then leave." And we did that for about a year.
How did your mom get through that ordeal?
She is an amazing woman. And a lot of people, they look at me and they say, "You're so strong." And I know where I get it from, because I know that she was a very praying woman. She was very faithful to her religion and told us that we will make it, and we had to work together, but we will make it. And I remember her asking us, did we want to go back to our home, or did we want to move to another house? And we all said, "Well, no, we want to go back where our friends are." There were about 40 kids that lived on my one block, and we all got along and played. And she said, "Okay." So she worked with our neighbors to get our house busted. It had turned into a drug house. She had it boarded up. She never stopped paying the mortgage on it. And she was a stay-at-home mom. So now she was doing odd jobs, trying to get money to keep paying her mortgage, along with government assistance. And within my father, he went to jail. She still took us every weekend to visit him. And we ended up moving back in our home. We cleaned it up. We lived there. I remember a couple of times when people would ask me, "Where did you live at?" And I told them, they said, "No, that's a drug house." And I would just look and say, "It's a long story, but no, that's our home." And I just have so much respect for her. Even not that long after that, she developed breast cancer. And she, thank God, she's a survivor for over 15 years now.
We're talking to Kim Newberry, and I'm Jack Crystal, and this is Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
You're listening to Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Once again, here's your host, Jack Crisula.
Welcome back. We're with Kim Newberry. Kim, talk to us about your husband, Jamal.
My husband was a very intelligent and loving husband. I met him my first year at Central State University. He was supposed to transfer to Michigan State at the end of his freshman year. I was supposed to go to University of Michigan, Ann Arbor on a scholarship, and I did not go. And we met my first week of my freshman year, which was the first week of his sophomore year. Over those years, we had a very loving relationship. We started off as friends. He became my best friend. Even today, people, they say Kim and Jamal, it goes together. We're like peanut butter and jelly. We're always together. We had a lot of fun. After he graduated in 1997, he came back to Detroit, Michigan to start working, to set up a home for us. And I was finishing out half of a year at Central State University. We were together for 14 years, and we were married for 7. We have 3 beautiful children, Latressa, Serena, and Jamal. My husband graduated with a degree in engineering, and he worked for a Japanese firm as an industrial engineer. I was working as a teacher when I first graduated for middle school students, and I thought I was going to go to law school. I thought that was my career goal that I wanted, and he supported me all of the way. However, our dream of when my daughters got in school, then I would go to law school. I received my acceptance letter and a positive pregnancy test for my son 2 weeks later. So that pretty much said, okay, it's not time. That is not what I'm supposed to do right now with my life, so I can accept that. And my husband was very supportive throughout that time.
Let's go back to November 4th, 2006, and share that day with us.
That day changed my life forever. Whereas everyone called us the perfect family. We were the model couple. Of course, we didn't think that, but that's how everyone viewed us. Our lives completely changed. I started seeing things that I thought were going on with Jamal, and I would always ask him, baby, is there something on your mind? Do you want to talk to me? And he would always just put his head down and say, no, baby, I can't tell you everything that's going on with me. Just know that I'll always take care of you and the kids. And for about a year and a half up until that day in 2006, he would always give me that same response. And on November 4th, 2006, I was at the kitchen table. We had decided that we would go to one of my sorority events. We always had, on the weekend, we had our date night, we had family time. And it was supposed to be our family time, but he said, let's go ahead and go to that event. And he was in the kitchen and he was reading the Bible at the kitchen table. And I said, well, okay. He said, I'll go pick up my mother. And I said, well, can you just massage this crick out of my neck? Because it is really killing me. I woke up with it. So I went and got a pillow out of the bedroom, laid it on the kitchen table, and I put my head down. And he started to massage my neck to the point that I fell asleep. I was so comfortable and relaxed. And how I awoke was because he had lifted my head and cut my throat. And it didn't hurt. And at that moment, I grabbed my neck and I turned around to him to say, what kind of game are you playing? And he was just standing there. And I can't describe the look on his face, but it's as if it wasn't him. And he wasn't responding to me. So my eyes finally gravitated to his hand, and I noticed that he was holding a knife. And then I looked at my hand, and blood started to squirt everywhere. And I grabbed my neck again, and I got up and I walked past him to get out of the kitchen. And he never moved. And I tripped over a chair, and I saw the phone, and I grabbed the phone, and I walked towards the door and opened up the front door. And the kids were in the living room, they were watching TV, they were all facing the television. And they saw the blood. And they said, what's wrong, mommy? And I just kept going. And when I looked at them, my first thought was to grab the kids and take them with me. However, something said, no, they'll be fine. So I went out of the door and I went next door to my neighbor. They had been living in their home for over 35 years and they couldn't get their door open. My oldest daughter said that she thought my husband did not move until I got out of the door. And she followed him to our bedroom, and we had a gun. I don't like guns. I still don't like guns. And the gun was kept in a briefcase. He unlocked the briefcase, unlocked the gun case, took the gun out, took the safety off, and then put the clip of bullets in it. And the whole time, my daughter's tapping him, saying, "Daddy, Daddy, what's wrong with mommy? Daddy, what's wrong with mommy?" And she said he would never respond to her. So he came out of the front door. And I did not see him approaching me from my left side. And he came and grabbed me by my arm. It was never violent, not snatching or anything. He just grabbed me by the arm and started to pull me back to the house. And at this time, my neighbor still hadn't gotten their door open. As he was pulling me back to the house, I fell in the front grass. And when I fell on my back, I looked up and I saw my daughter looking out of the picture window in the living room. And all I could think was, Lord, please don't let her see whatever is about to happen. And I saw her looking there. And then I looked towards my husband and I saw the gun. And I started swinging my arms and legs. And I saw my daughter run upstairs. And she said that she screamed, and my other two children followed her upstairs. throughout the swinging my arms and my legs, I kept praying. I don't know what to say. Lord, what to say, what to say. And I would say, Jamal, don't do this. Jamal, please stop. Jamal, don't do this. Jamal, why are you doing this? And I would pray in between pausing, as I paused to say those things to him. And the only time he spoke was when I said, Jamal, Jesus wouldn't want you to do this. And he said, it has to be this way. And I kept swinging and waving my arms and my legs. And then finally, I felt as if someone just came behind me and just comforted me. And I felt warmth. And I heard a voice just say, just stop. It'll be okay. Just stop. So at that very moment, I stopped. And I put my left arm over the top of my head. And I just laid there. And according to my neighbor, who was in the window, she was screaming and her husband couldn't get out the door. She said that he shot me in the head. And after that shot, I was out. I saw silver go across my eyes and I don't remember anything else. She said after that, he shot me in the arm and without hesitation, he turned and shot himself in the head. When I came to, I was cold. I was very cold and I kept saying, I'm very cold. And I heard a lot of noise and I heard police officers saying, don't touch her, leave her alone, please don't touch her. And they asked me, ma'am, who did this? And I couldn't see anything. And I told them exactly what happened. And I said, my husband did this. I think something is wrong with him. I think he has a mental health illness. We've been trying to get help for him. And they asked me, what was he wearing? And when I described him to a T, I could hear people walking away from me. And I heard an officer say, the assailant is laying there. And I said, and he's dead, isn't he? And no one would respond to me. And I remember getting in the ambulance. And I told them where my children were, my mother's phone number, my sister-in-law's number, my mother-in-law's number, my stepfather's number, where everyone was at. And the last thing I remember saying was, I'm going to die. And then I paused and said, no, I'm not. And I woke up at Grace Hospital.
We're talking to Kim Newberry. Unbelievable story. And when we come back, you didn't hear any words of hatred, resentment, animosity. You heard love. And she still loves Jamal today. We'll talk to her about that. And I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
Welcome back to Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Now, here's your host, Jack Krasula.
We're talking to Kim Newberry. Kim, a bullet through your temple. You lost an eye. You were blind. Doctors thought you would never see again. Seven surgeries later, you're a beautiful lady. You still love Jamal. There's no hatred, no animosity. That's impossible. The name of the show is Anything is Possible. That's impossible.
Thank you. A lot of people ask me if I'm angry or why. They'll say, it's okay to be angry. And I said, I'm not angry. There are times when I do have my moments. Not angry at him, but angry at, you know, why this had to happen to my family, why it had to happen to my children. They had a real hard time, and they actually said that several times. But we are the perfect family. Why did this have to happen to us? But I've never been angry at my husband because I know that he would have never have done this in his right mind. And I feel sorry for him because I know now that he has schizophrenia and that he was really suffering for a long time, and he didn't tell me. So he had no one that he was talking to and no one to listen to him about the issue that he was having. But I have no animosity towards him. This is my path that has been chosen just for me. And that night when I heard that voice, it said, just stop. It'll be okay. Everything is okay. I remember when the doctors took the bandages off my eye and they said, you know, Ms. Newberry, we don't think your eye is ever going to work again. We did surgery for 9 hours. We don't think that it's possible. You may never be able to see again because the bullet passed through one eye and through the optical nerve bed of my right eye. And I cried all night and I prayed. And the next morning I said, take it. The eye that I know is not working, that you're operating on, take it. What are my options? And they gave me my options and I made the decision. And I remember right after that, my nurse was in the hospital room and she noticed that I was following her around the room. And she said, I couldn't talk. I had a trach in my throat 3 times for about 3 weeks each time. And she said, can you see me? And I said, I shook my head, yes. And she screamed and she went and got all the doctors. And for probably a week, I had every doctor and nurse you can imagine in my hospital room. And still at that moment, I was very thankful and grateful that I had sight, that I could see my children grow up. And I was thankful for what I had, not for what I didn't have. And my regret is that my husband can't be here to see my children grow. But I tell them that I know he is watching. And they always do crafts for him. And we don't take them to a graveside, but they'll make different things for him. My daughters have started a book of poetry, and every time they write a new poem, they type it up and they put it on the laptop. And the poems tell about how they are dealing with the grieving process, but they know that their dad would never have done this if he would have been in his right mind. And that's what I tell them. And they know it because of the relationship that we've always had. So we are just looking towards the future. And I have to be that example. When I first started driving about 2 months after my eye surgery, well, one of my eye surgeries, they said, Mommy, what are you doing? And I had to take them to school because my stepdad, who was taking them to school, had become ill with cancer. And I looked around and I said, I have to do this. And they said, but Mommy, I don't really think you can. And I said, I at least have to try. And I think I can, so I will try. And I told them, all I tell you to do is to try. Do your best. And I've been driving ever since.
Kim Newberry, the courage you have is phenomenal. And the trust you have in God is amazing. There's a listener tonight going through really tough times and mm-hmm. thinking about suicide and saying, if only I had that trust, that courage. What do you say to that listener?
You can find it. I think that everyone has to find their source of strength, whatever it is, whomever it is. And I found mine through my spiritual foundation. And I would say to that listener that when you think about suicide, it's very selfish. My husband was not in his right mind. And actually, I remember about 2 hours before all of that happened, we had family prayer as we normally do. And at the end of the prayer, he said to the children, I want you all to realize how thankful you are to have had two parents in your life. Some only have one, some may have both, some don't have any. But I always remember how thankful you are. And I opened my eyes and looked up, like, where did that come from? But it is a selfish thought because he may have relieved himself from maybe the issues and the problems that he was going through, but he caused a lot of pain and other issues for those that he left behind. So to that listener, I would say to think of those that you love and who really love you, and they would not want to see you leave here and take your own life, and to just find that source of strength they have and build upon it, that you can overcome any obstacle that comes your way if you would just believe in yourself.
What do you say, Kim, to somebody who says, I had a fairy tale life, great family, great husband, husband's lost his job, we're losing our house, and I'm bitter. You say, Kim, that it takes too much energy to be bitter. How do you get over bitterness?
Bitterness takes so much energy. You have to first forgive that person, and then you have to go to them and tell them that you forgive them in order for you to truly move on. And I would say not to dwell on what has happened, but look towards making things better. So if you've lost that job, you've lost that home, and it's your spouse, maybe sitting down and saying, how can we make this work? And really putting forth everything you have to make it work. And again, looking towards their source of strength. Mine is God. And I look to Him to help me in every decision that I make.
We had a guest a few years ago, Wayusi Olosolo, that recently passed, an amazing human being. And he said that being bitter is like me taking poison in the hope that you die. How are the three children doing, Kim?
It has been a long journey towards recovering from what has happened, not just of losing their father, but losing income from out of our household, removing ourselves from the home that we were in, getting used to having a single parent household, and then realizing what their father did to me. It's a lot for them to take on, but I talk to them and I'm very open with them and helping them to understand what happened to their father, making them understand the illness that he had, and how even though these things happen, they're not alone. These things have happened to other people in the world, and how grateful that they should be of the opportunities that they still have. There are so many people that support us and love us and want to help us move forward. And I tell them to find their source of strength and to find something that helps them to deal with their grieving, and that's how they came up with poetry. And they also have been through counseling for about 2 years, but they are doing so well. They are award winners in martial arts. They are honor roll students in school. They are active in various activities. And a lot of people told me, and this is to someone who may be in a similar situation, people were telling me, oh, you have those children too busy. They're too busy. You need to let them rest. And I say, they were busy like this before our tragedy happened. So if I take all of that from them, it allows them time to sit and think and just really ponder over what has happened. And that's how children set into depression. And I wanted their lives to be as normal as possible, so I kept them active.
We're talking to Kim Newberry, and I'm Jack Crisula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
Anything Is Possible with Jack Crisula on News Talk 760 WJR.
Welcome back. We're with Kim Newberry, who had a fairy tale life with her husband Jamal, three children, and then 3 years ago, he slit her throat, shot her in the head, shot her in the arms, and then killed himself. Kim, you and I met through For the Kids Foundation. What has that organization done for you and your children?
They are phenomenal. I tell everyone that I meet about them. This organization, my sister-in-law actually saw an ad on them and urged me to contact them. And when I did, immediately, within 4 days, they contacted me to set up an intake and to bring information to help them along with starting our case and opening it. The organization has assisted with utilities, with putting my kids in martial arts classes, purchasing eyeglasses for my daughter. And what I really love about them is a lot of organizations won't help you unless you're 1 foot out of the door, you're already homeless, or you're just about there. They didn't look at that. They saw what I was doing to maintain my family and said, we'll help you in any way possible. And that was so just honorable of them to do so. And they actually work towards fulfilling their mission. They do what they say they do.
ForTheKidsFoundation.org.
Yes.
About 2 months ago at the Towns in a black tie affair, 400 people in Birmingham, they honored you. Our own Paul W. Smith was the MC. You come up on that stage. What was that experience like?
I felt like I was on the Academy Awards or something, and it was a surprise. I had no idea that they were going to honor me. Initially, in my conversations with the Yatumas for the Kids Foundation, I was just asked if I could come up and to speak about how the foundation has helped me and my family. And when I go up to speak, they had just played the video about my family, and they asked me to turn around and look at this screen with all of these things on it for a life makeover package for us. And it included everything from school shopping sprees to a car to a life and personal coach. And I was so overwhelmed. The children are still trying to come down from that experience, and I'm so thankful to them for that. Things are going so well, and I'm so appreciative of that.
When you said your goodnight prayer that night, put your head on the pillow, what did you say to God that night?
I thanked Him for making my testimony something that will help several people. And I thanked Him for bringing so many people together that actually love and care about people that they don't know. And that I hope that He blesses those people as well as many others who may hear the story and can share it with others.
Within the last month, we've had a couple of incidents in town. The 7 kids killed at the or shot at the bus stop, 2:30 at Warren and Southfield. Then the 5 teenagers killed trying to beat the train at the crossing. Kim Newberry, what would you say to the parents of that 19-year-old driver whose license had just been suspended?
I would say to them that we all have our paths that we have to take in life, and to find their source of strength and to work with the other parents that have also lost a child or children to get through this process and to use this experience to maybe help someone else. I believe that sometimes we go through things in order to help someone else. And we may not agree with it or how it has happened, but I can attest to several things that have happened in my life that have encouraged me or gave me the wisdom that I needed to help someone else.
Today, you're the voluntary director for Alternatives for Girls.
Yes.
Tell us about that organization.
I've been with Alternatives for Girls since June of 2004. I was formerly the prevention director. And currently what I do, I place volunteers at our organization as well as interns, and they work with our shelter, they work with the women in our outreach program, as well as the girls that are in our after school and mentoring programs.
Talk to us about the girls that your organization helps.
These girls, we catch them at the prevention state of their life, intervention, or at crisis. The prevention program serves to stop girls from getting into risky behavior. They come from the community, Southwest Detroit. The shelter catches them at their crisis time in life. Maybe they're homeless or they're about to be homeless. The girls range anywhere from 15 to 21, and we house them there at the facility. And then our outreach program reaches out to those teens who are involved, may have experienced drugs or sexual activity, or they're involved in prostitution. And we bring those women in and we work with them on a daily basis to help them in their change of life.
If you want to learn more, alternativesforgirls.org. Kim, what have these girls taught you, Kim Newberry?
They have taught me that no matter what life brings us, we can still look forward to making a positive thing happen for not only for ourselves but other people. I've seen girls come in with bad attitudes and they don't want assistance, but in coming there and meeting other people, their peers, meeting staff members that really care about them and want to help them. They have changed their outlook on life. They not only respect themselves, but they begin to respect other people. And several of those girls have gone on, are in college or are college graduates.
Anybody listening tonight, courage screams out love, trust in God, and surrender. If there's a listener tonight that says, I'm really going through tough times, but I'm embarrassed, Kim. I can't tell anybody. What do you say?
You may think that you're alone, but there are so many people out there that may be going through the same thing, and all you have to do is ask. As I said, some of the best advice my mother has given me is to not be afraid to ask. The worst you can get is an answer that's no, and then you just move on and you look to get the answer that you want. So to just reach out to someone, you never know what someone else may be going through, and while you think your situation is really bad, someone has a worse situation than your own.
Last question. What advice would you give to our young listeners tonight?
I would encourage them to make the most out of their life. That the decision, tell them that the decisions that they make today will direct their paths for the rest of their life. And they have to believe in themselves, not to see themselves as victims, no matter what their lifestyle may be, no matter what their home or their family situation is, but that they can make a life for themselves. They can break cycles. And all that they have to do is believe in themselves and find a support system to help them accomplish their goals.
Kim Newberry, you're an inspiration to everybody you meet. You're living proof that anything is possible. And you also show that by trusting God and surrendering, that's the key to peacefulness. Keep it up.
Thank you.
Please join us next Sunday. Until then, I'm Jack Krasula. Thanks for listening, and make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Anything is possible.